Yes, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Paper Trails Podcast with your host, Shamaki. And today I don't have my co-host with me. He's out here doing madnesses. That's what he's up to, you know. He told me he was climbing Ben Nevis just to clear his mind, you know, not even for a challenge, just to explore the sights and stuff. But now he's not here with me today, but I do have a special guest. We have a Is it a recurring guest? Is that what you call it?
I guess. I mean,
Well,
it's
I
the
mean, you can
second
tell
one.
by
If you
his
want me
voice.
back more, I'll be happy.
No, absolutely, absolutely. We are reintroducing my boy Kashif Booth again. Welcome
Thank
back.
you. Thank you. It's good to be back. It's good to
Welcome
be
back.
back.
Welcome back. It's
Yes,
nice
yes.
to have you here again.
Yes,
You know,
yes.
last season obviously you kicked it off, and this season we've got you in again because obviously you are just up to all sorts. Yeah, just up to all sorts, dipping your hands into many different things. Obviously, I know you had the show on Amazon, and then now, obviously, one thing I want to talk about was Garms.
Yes.
So I don't know if you guys have seen it recently, but Garms is a documentary that has come out on Channel 5, which is basically talking about the Black British sort of culture in fashion and how it's kind of evolved from like the 1940s up till now. And I saw it on Friday, and I can't lie, I was actually quite impressed by it. Is it episodic or is it just one kind of documentary?
Just one off,
It's just
unfortunately.
one
We
off, yeah.
wanted it to be a series, but
It would have been so good as a series.
Definitely,
So if you
definitely.
guys haven't seen it, there's going to be like, I don't know, is it spoilers? Well, it's not really
No, it's
spoilers,
not spoilers.
but
It's out now. Check it out on my five right now.
Absolutely. No, but you guys should definitely check it out. Especially when it comes to understanding the culture that we are a part of, I guess, as Black British people or Black people that are living in the UK. But before we get into that, let's get into your involvement and how that whole opportunity kind of came about for yourself.
Sure. Well, it's actually on BET UK,
Yeah.
but because Paramount owns Channel 5
Yeah.
and Paramount also owns BET, so
Oh, so that's where they
so
put
that's why it's on their digital
it.
platform, MyFive. So, Garms is now out now on BET UK, and the reason, well, the how I got the opportunity to work on the show was because the series producer Marley Edwards, I've known for a good few years. She actually directed my web series pilot called Newlyweds. So we stayed in contact and we're friends. We've been like knowing each other for like 5 years now, which is crazy. And she reached out to me in the summer last year and said that I'm going to be producing this documentary and I want you a part of it. So I was like, sure, this sounds amazing. You know, we haven't really seen something about Black culture's influence on British fashion like that, and it was great to be a part of a documentary which is just a positive representation of our influence in this country. And that's what I really like about the documentary. We're able to highlight so much of that, and you know, our influence is everywhere and it's undeniable.
No, of course. I think I remember a few years ago I wanted to make like a video on sort of the, because there is that, you know, like Black American culture. And then I was kind of like, okay, so what is like the Black British version of that we have over here? And the more I kind of was kind of going into it, the more I guess confused I was becoming, because I was like, okay, they've in American version it's very quite kind of set, like it's this is how it is, this is what they've had for generations and generations. But I think because of us and the so many eclectic groups and different nationalities coming in, that is quite difficult to kind of grasp at exactly what Black culture is. And as we were going through, as I was watching through the documentary, it was kind of clearing up a bit in terms of, in the beginning, you've got the 1940s, and when you talk about the Windrush generation coming in and how they were very much suave and very like had tailor-made suits, and like that was what the style that they were going for. But also it was hand in hand because they didn't really want to stand out, because of the new place that they're in, and they didn't want to get, I think as someone put it, was like a thread or a hair out of place. They wanted to be, you know, on point. And then as the generations got more comfortable and more being British, then it would turn into like, you know, like the soul started coming out, I'd say, of different groups and stuff like that. So to go into that beginning part, I wanted to kind of know from your perspective, because I know you was doing the research as well on this, like some of the interesting things that you kind of found out as you was going through this documentary.
I think it's because I'm connected to the culture. So my heritage is Jamaican. So my grandparents came here in the 1940s and in the 1960s as well. So that whole generation had such an impact on me. So I kind of already knew. It was really about finding contributors who would be able to share their history and their a culture, a part of it. So we were able to, let's say, do talking head interviews with them, but also do the research into how we can build their story to fit it into the documentary like that. So we, for that specific section, we looked at people who are from Caribbean heritage and what was it like with their parents, their grandparents, how were they raised, how did they dress, what was the style they were going for. And because of that time, it was very much of a, it wasn't as liberal as things are today. So it was very much tight structure. This is how you we'll go outside and, you know, this is how you work in spaces and stuff like that. So we really wanted to highlight that and also kind of look at the influence of carnival and how that has influenced the way how fashion is right now in terms of like for music festivals and stuff like that. So it really we really wanted to highlight the history of it, but also just show where everything comes from and how it comes from the West Indian culture, because that was the influx, you know, of black people in this country. And then it was, you know, African culture and stuff like that. So that's what we did.
And so when you was kind of trying to find people, stuff like that, how was the process in finding people? Was it mainly just deciding on whoever could tell the story better, or was it kind of like, oh, it's fine, anyone can try and do it? Or did you have specific people in mind that you wanted to speak to?
We looked at certain people who are very influential within the fashion industry. So we were looking at we've got somebody in there. Well, we tried to get a person called Nicholas Daly. He's a menswear designer, but he is from Caribbean descent. So we would look at top fashion designers, we'd look at stylists, editors, fashion editors, and we would then do extensive research on them to see, okay, what's their background. And we'd also have also calls with them. So we would like have one-on-one calls with them on like Zoom and really find out their whole history, what got them into fashion, what was their culture like, how were they raised. And then we saw how we took like little think pieces of it and thought, okay, and put it in a document. So we would then have that pitch document, and then we'd go back to the commissioner and say, these are all the people we've got as contributors who are interested, and this is how they would fit in the story. And then it would be up to the commissioner whether or not they would sign off on it.
No, absolutely, because I feel like I feel like documentaries are quite interesting, because there's a lot of information that you have to try and pack in a dense kind of way. But not only that, but you have to, I guess, cut away and trim off so many actual pieces, especially now because it's not an episodic thing. I felt like if each period was given a lot more in depth, it would have been sensational, you know.
I mean, that would have been ideal.
Not saying that it's bad now. No, it's still good. But I feel like that would have given it a lot more justice. But even then, to be fair, I like the way that the timeline went on, and then like I said, then started moving towards like the 60s, the 70s, and how the clothing style became more progressive. But not just because of cultures changing, but also as a defiance to society. Because before it was like, no, you have to be trim and proper. You can't move around like this, you can't express yourselves. But then people were like, no, but we are very expressive. So therefore we will, regardless whether or not you do it. And I feel like that's always a an intricate part of, I think, society or in history, that I feel like a lot of people kind of forget, just how much fashion, how much art, all of these kind of different things are a symbolism and like a way of like revolution against what the norm is, yeah, or what it is, mm-hmm. you know, because I think there was someone in there that said something that was, I think she had the, was it the braid?
Oh, yeah, that Shingi from the band Noisy Yet.
Yeah. So she kind of said it very well. She was like, that someone had to be brave and out there mm-hmm. before her, for her to be able to be yeah. comfortable to try and, yeah. you know, express mm-hmm. herself. And then as it goes on, then you see like the African, people from Africa coming in mm-hmm. And their influences and all that kind of mm-hmm. stuff. And I just wanted to kind of know your thoughts on that as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously you're from Caribbean descent, mm-hmm. But then now, when you hear that the Black British culture has now also got an African mix to it, mm-hmm. how would you kind of define where we are like now when it comes to culture?
But I feel like Afro and Caribbean culture is merged.
Yeah.
Especially within major cities where there's a lot of Black influence across yeah. the country. So I feel like it's influential in everything what we're doing, in music, in yeah. our culture, in the way we dress, in the way we talk. You know, the slang as well, the food yeah. we eat. It's just all integrated in everything that we do. So that's why when we were telling the story, we wanted it to go from a timeline event. So yeah. starting off from Windrush, then going into the African experience and yeah. also how that kind of integrated and really made an impact on Britain. And then showing that the merging of all these cultures, because it's, because England is such a melting pot of different yeah. cultures, it just shows that how big and bold it is,
yeah.
it's bound to shake things up.
Yeah.
And that's what we really wanted to show, because without it, I mean, England probably would be very dull. Yeah. You know, I don't think, you know, the revolution of like in the 60s and the yeah. 70s where people were, you know, wearing their natural hair and were protesting and yeah. activism, you know, they were just doing it bold, you yeah. know, and that's what we wanted to share. And that's how people went against the norm, you mm. know, the way they dressed. And it just, when people see pioneers doing that,
yeah.
like musicians and stuff like that, and some of the musicians we featured did that,
mm.
it just impacts everybody who's watching, because they're seeing themselves represented, or people who yeah. don't look like them. They're like, wow, that looks amazing. I want to do it too. Yeah. And then that's just how influence kind of integrates into other people. Yeah. So,
and also like even that point as well, that the lady made, which was like every generation that came afterwards
yeah.
wouldn't be able to express themselves if it wasn't for the generation before, mm-hmm. because now people wouldn't look at it and be like, oh, that's a bit strange.
Yeah.
Instead, they'll be like, oh, okay, I kind of get where this is mm-hmm. this is coming from.
Yeah.
And I kind of wanted to know, like, from the documentary, like, just from, like, your perspective as well, not even so much so of the factory side of mm-hmm. making it, but, mm-hmm. like, just your overall kind of opinion of mm-hmm. what it was. Like, why do you feel like this documentary was, like, important to make?
I think it's important to make because when it comes to Black documentaries about our influence in this country, it's primarily about trauma.
Yeah.
Racism, police killing Black youths.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't really see something what really celebrating, you know, us in a positive light. And that's what really attracted me to want to be a part of the project, yeah. because it's the first of its kind, you know, and I hope that it leads to more, because yeah. there's so many more Black stories that can be shared, yeah. and that's what we need more of. And it's emphasis on, like you were saying before, when you're looking at Black American stuff and their culture, but yeah. this really educates and highlights, you know, Black British culture, because yeah. sometimes people can't put a finger on it, like, well, exactly, what is exactly. it, or how do we describe it? And I'm always pushing for that, because yeah. there's so much of Black British culture. We're not just our heritage, but us being here, we formed our own culture, which is this melting pot of yeah. so many great Black cultures around the world.
And I think that's an interesting point, because I think now you can kind of see I wouldn't say it's very like specific,
yeah.
but like, for example, like Cortez, or mm-hmm. I forgot who else was also featured in it. Obviously, it was Trapstar.
We had Daily Paper.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. So now it's like it went.
No, we didn't. Sorry, Fully Paid.
Fully Paid.
Daily Paper. Yeah, Fully Paid.
Fully Paid. Yeah. So now you have, like, for example, like I said, the Windrush generation, then that sort of African diaspora and all the different people coming in, and then that when the African community was coming in, as I'm saying, African community, like, I'm not part of it, but like, their culture was very homegrown,
yes,
and rooted, and you know, had amazing colors, and it's quite eccentric, and and now, like, you have Cortez and you have, you know, Trapstar, and they don't necessarily follow the same kind of route that was there in the Windrush generation or when the African diaspora came. It's like, it's their own thing now. Yeah. I feel like it's, and I think, is it Clint? That's who's,
Clint. So he was,
when she kind of asked him about the, because he's from Nigeria, and if that kind of had a part to play. And he was kind of like, nah, it didn't really. So now I feel like when people kind of ask what is Black British culture, I kind of feel like it's that kind of space that him and the trap star and stuff like that are going, not in the sense of the clothes that they make, but in the sense that now it's not tied into anything. But it's the formation of all of the stuff that we are now interested in and what we've liked growing up and our own way of thinking rather than necessarily just falling back on our parents' kind of way. And I found that quite interesting. But I feel like from your perspective, like, where would you see it going now?
Black British culture. Yeah. That's a really good question. I think,
because there's always so much that's been added to it that it's like, and the reason why I'm asking this is because I was, before this, I was kind of looking into like research, and I was looking into like sort of the African American culture, and for them, they wonder the same thing about us, like, what is the Black British culture? They're like, oh, they don't have a specific dance, they don't have a specific dish, they don't have like a specific thing. It's just like, here's a Somali dish, here's a Nigerian dish, it's just also like kind of like, where would you see it, the culture kind of progressing now?
I think Black Britons are in such a unique space and a unique position, because majority of us are maybe second generation, maybe third, sometimes still even first, right? True. So it's weird to say that Black people are new to this country, because we relatively are, you know. Black people have always been here, but the influx was really from 1948, right? So I'm excited to see where Black British culture will go. I'm not sure what it will look like. I think we've seen a beginning of it from how our dialect is and how Black British people speak, and how the slang, where it was an infusion of Jamaican patois, and then it's also now infused with a lot of African dialect, and also with like different Nigerian what's the word, tribes and stuff like that. So it's all kind of mixed in, and so we then formulate that into our own English, kind of like African American vernacular English, what they use. So,
and that's quite interesting. We had a guest on recently, and then he was like, it's only in London where you can formulate a sentence like Wagwa Mayak, which is like different cultures
exactly just in one sentence. And that's just how it's pieced together. And it's still English, but we're just, it's like I said, it's such a melting pot. So I think Black British culture has kind of really, we're in baby steps, but I think maybe we're in toddler now. You know, we're kind of rapidly moving. When you look at grime, when you look at funky house and garage, you know, that all stems from, you know, Black British culture, and that's its own sound, that's its own culture, drill music, Afro swing music, you know, it's taking everything what we're born into and making it our own, because we are here in Britain, so we're adapting to the British culture as well, and it's just like mixing it in, and so maybe 3-4 generations after us, it's going to be really exciting to see what it is, and then that's what we can refer to, you know, and look at, and then you can see that. So, yeah, describing Black British culture now, to me, I would say that it's forming its own identity, but its roots are deep into its Afro and Caribbean heritage.
Yeah.
That's the only way I can describe it. And I think it's prideful to have that, because we still have that. We still have that pride to know where we come from.
Yeah,
and I think sometimes, like with African Americans, they know they're American because they've got generations for like 4 or 5 generations back. You know, they don't know their roots in Africa.
Beyond that,
you know, they don't know that. So that's where we're different, you know, but they've been able to form a lot of their culture through slavery, you know, because they had to. They had to. So all of their ancestors who were African, they had that, but, you know, it got watered down.
Yeah.
And that might happen here. We don't know. But it's always an interesting discussion. So I think that's a really good point you raised.
I think that because that's where, like, I felt like towards the kind of end where you see, like I said again, the Cortez and stuff like that, it's like it doesn't have any specific roots. Like if you just saw it by itself, you wouldn't know where it came, like the descendant of who made like none of that stuff. It's just kind of like this is our clothes now. This is part of our, and that's where I felt like it was kind of interesting, because I feel like in that space will grow something where eventually it's very unified and it's not like, okay, this is Ghanaian, this is Nigerian, this is Jamaican. It's like very much this is what this is. But no, like, and I think what would you say, like, was your thoughts kind of when finishing up on that, like, kind of point, or even the documentary, like, do you feel like it was kind of told well enough or in depth enough, or do you feel like there was a lot that was kind of like missing that you feel like you would have loved to have added on?
I think because it's the first of its time, I think it was good that it was structured in a way that it told the history of fashion in this country from the Black culture perspective, and not only educated but celebrated it, but also ended on what's currently going on, where we are in the present in 2024, and showing where it can potentially go in the future. And I think that's the great way to end it. Finishing the documentary, we felt happy, we was proud with proud of it, because we know what we've been able to achieve, you know. Like I said, there's been nothing like this before. So we hope that this opens the doors for more documentaries like this to be made, and that commissioners and people see that there's joy in celebrating us instead of just making content what only talks about what is against us. So
this,
I think,
felt a lot more celebratory.
And that's what we wanted. We wanted, it's not always about trauma. And that's why it was great that it was on, you know, BET UK, because, you know, for it to be on that platform is special, and that's what you want to see more from a network like that as well.
That's what I was interested as well to see BET. Like, I hadn't seen BET in like in years, I think. Is it still like going on? Like,
yes, but it's only available online. So it's only on their on-demand service, which is on MyFive. So so they do a lot of Black British stuff. Like, they did something called a Black British, the Evolution of Music. Yes, that's what they did as well. That was a series. That was a 4-part series. Yeah, and there's other, like, Dating While Black. Like, there's other series that they do on there. But, you know, they don't have
on
the budget.
BET or on, like,
Channel 5? Well, BET UK. But BET, it's still UK, classed as BET UK. But it's on their MyFive streaming platform. So, so it's tricky, but it's still...
It's tricky, but it's still out there.
But they still call it a BET UK production. So, so I just don't think BET UK has the budget. So it used to be a channel, but it's no longer a channel what you can watch on TV. So otherwise you won't know about it, you know. And it's funny you bring that up, because that's my gripe with like the UK, well, the UK marketing of shows. Like, I'm always talking about on my TikTok as well, like, when you look at the promotion of shows, especially Black British ones or ones of people of color, there's no marketing budget. They rely heavily on social media
and word of mouth.
And word of mouth, and that's arguably the worst.
But how comes it? Why is that?
Because they're not putting the budget into marketing a show. Mm. So, and if they do, they have them on like daytime TV doing an interview, and it's like,
okay.
But it's you're not watching daytime TV. Yeah, I'm not watching daytime TV.
Who's going to know that?
So how are you going to know about it? And then if you're just posting it on social media, then you're not going to, how are you going to reach your main target audience?
Yeah.
Because as we know, social media is algorithm based. So if you don't consume documentaries, or you don't watch film and TV like that on your phone, like on Twitter, Instagram, whatever, you're not going to see it.
Yeah. Because so, I even feel like with Gums, I think if it wasn't for you, I don't think I would have actually even...
No, you wouldn't have.
Of known.
No, you wouldn't have.
Yeah.
Like, no, that's why all of us, the editorial team, made a conscious effort to promote it because, you know, they, the production company who did hire us, they were smart enough to make sure that they get a black team to make it because they didn't know anything about black culture. We know what we're doing as well. And the series producer, Marley Edwards, she's worked in the fashion industry for like Tom Ford and some huge designers as well for like during the fashion week. So she knows fashion. So it was great to just work with somebody like that. Yeah. But promotion needs to be key. Like we need billboard ads. We need print ads. We need ads on the tube.
Because even when I checked on like Twitter to see if there was promotions, funny enough, I just saw you.
Of course.
I saw you and I think maybe one other person and like one post from BET UK.
Yeah, and that's it. And so how's anyone supposed to know about it? Yeah. And then this is like the issue when it comes to like black content, because if you're not promoting it, then commissioners and people might say, well, look, see, we commissioned the black show.
Yeah.
It didn't do well. But if you're not putting the money behind it to actually make it reach its target audience, then how's it going to do well? You're not giving it a fair shot.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I think that's wild. Essentially, because I feel like from the production house's standpoint, I feel like maybe if you did it, put the money in to hire people, maybe you would put a bit more energy in trying to. And I've also seen your TikToks as well. They're very good.
Thank you.
They're very good. I think there's also quite a few gripes that you've got against that. I think but you know what, I think that's quite interesting. I think the whole production houses and stuff like that, inside how the sausage is made, I don't think a lot of people kind of understand, or I think a lot of people kind of forget. They just see the product and they're like, okay, cool, sure, no problem. But I think all the space is kind of in between. And obviously you've not only worked on this, but you also had that project as well on Amazon. And in that one, were you like writing in there, or was it?
No, I produced that.
Produced that one. Yeah. So like in the space of like a producer, is it essentially you formulate this idea and then you try to make it, but before you try to make it, you have to then go to the production houses and then try get commissioned that way?
Well, usually they work with a writer, so usually they will commission a writer to develop a show, you know, or they'll they create some sort of deal where they're going to develop a show or a pilot and a treatment to pitch to networks, and then so the network then has to commission it through the production company, or it might be like a co-production with another production company, depending on how big one production company is or not. So then that's how it can go. So then they'll bring on producers to produce it, or they might have already like an in-house team with the production company to produce it who's experienced to do that, and then it kind of goes from there. So it all depends on what type of commission you get.
But even with the writer, are they the ones that are deciding who who becomes the writer, or does the writer's the one that goes to them?
The writer is the one who goes to them, like or the production company might reach out to them. It all depends, like, you know, there's so many ways how you can get a production made or commissioned. Like, I know writers who've got a commission for networks and production companies and they've gone directly to them, they've it's through somebody they've known, or that's how a web series I exec produced called Talia Versus, that's how that got commissioned. Like, they saw it online and then reached out to the writer. Yeah. And it went like that. So there's so many ways.
No.
Especially in this modern
world. There's really two ways. Mm-hmm. The two reasons why I'm kind of asking. One is kind of like because I think as Inspire, mm-hmm. And the people that kind of like listen to us, we kind of are essentially creatives.
Yeah.
Creatives, writers, like stuff like that. People that kind of want mm-hmm. to get their story across. And I feel like sometimes when we see the stories that are kind of about us mm-hmm. being made, it's always kind of interesting to know, okay, who's kind of doing that. For example, like when it comes to like Top Boy mm-hmm. or something, and hearing that mm-hmm. the writers are like white and stuff mm-hmm. like that, it's like, mm-hmm. how did that happen? You know, and yeah. it's kind of like, yeah. So it's like, I mean, the reason why I love, you know, like, I mean, picking your brain about mm-hmm. certain different other stuff that obviously you've done, just to kind of teach us mm-hmm. really
okay, I understand.
about everything, because it's kind of like this, for example, is the Gums mm-hmm. was a great way to kind of like showcase and celebrate Black British culture mm-hmm. so like if someone else wanted to do something else, how they go about it, let's mm-hmm. say with BET, would they need to find a writer first and then go straight to them?
Not necessarily, because it's factual. Yeah. So, you know, again, it's like sometimes it's who you know and how and your connections as well. So it's like, so essentially, like you would have to pitch it with a production company if you have a documentary idea, because you need a company to make it.
Yeah.
And so that's how you would pitch it to a commissioner, and then they greenlit it or not. Mm. Like that's just literally it. But you know, you have to come with everything. You know, how much you think it's going to cost, like you have to do a whole budget, all that stuff, give them all the logistics, beforehand. And then that's how it kind of gets greenlit like that, so that you get the money to make it.
Even like with the cost, how would you figure that out?
It's usually with experience, with experience, because with this documentary, we had Talking Heads, we had Talking Head interviews, which were the studio. We had on location studios as well. So we kind of
did you pay the guys or you're not allowed?
Yeah, we did. No NDA here, but they got paid. But also it was how it was going to look aesthetically as well. Mm. So the series producer worked closely with the commissioning editor to, you know, how to structure the show.
Yeah.
So then the series producer would come up with the format, how she wanted everything to look, like the Talking Head interviews, the interviews with some of the guests at their studios and locations, so it all fit into the story. You know, we're gonna visit them at their studio, and they're gonna cover this, and we're gonna promote their brand, and so it just had to be really kind of pushed that over to the commissioner. But then also what you guys have to remember is that you might have a great story, but the commissioner knows her audience. So a lot of the time we would pitch people to be on the show, and then we'd get feedback saying, who are these people?
Damn, really?
Who are they? Look, this is my target audience, we need some names. Who are the names? So then we'd have to go back and do even more further research. And so we'd have to show like who'd be wearing the designer clothes. So for example, a huge menswear designer is Martine Rose. Not a lot of people know about her, but she's huge. And so then I had to go back and find all of these images and interviews of people wearing,
to try and prove,
wearing her name and like her designer name. And then you saw people like Rihanna and ASAP Rocky and Pharrell and all these people, and they're like, great, we'll sign off on it. So there's all these things you factor into, like, you know. And so it was a lot of work in terms of like having to fight for people to be on the show, because we're, as the editorial team, we're looking at it from the perspective of this is great for the story. And then they're looking at it, the network is looking at it from an audience, my audience won't watch this. But we were looking at it from the lens that the fashion industry people who know them, they know it, you know. They're gonna love this. So that's what we will also have to look at.
That's an interesting perspective though.
But when you're curating content as a producer, I'm always telling writers, you have to look at who your target audience is. Who is the audience? Why would somebody want to watch this, you know? It's always, now if you don't want to make art that is going to be consumed by masses, then do whatever you want to do. But if you want to make money, That's what you've got to do. If you want to get paid to do it, then you've got to think like a producer and think, who is my target audience here? Who's going to watch it? Why would they want to watch it?
Yeah. So in some ways, kind of like how the commission was kind of thinking
about
it. And is the commission also black? Or
Yes.
Okay, no, see, that's kind of, that's a very good point. Because I feel like when you're starting out, essentially, you just kind of want to do what you want to do.
Yeah.
And then, like, I mean, even if you put it in a YouTube perspective, let's say if you wanted to make a YouTube video, there's a lot of people that just do what they want to do, which is kind of like vlogs and this and that, like, here's my life. But then sometimes the question does come of, like, okay, but why would someone watch your, watch
but then your vlog? There is an audience for that. People love watching vlogs. Like, I have a friend who watches the deadest vlogs I've ever seen. Like, people going to their... following them going to the supermarket and then they're taking out all of the stuff they've bought. The what the hell is this? This is boring, man. But people like to watch other people living their normal boring lives.
Yeah,
you know, if I'm watching a vlog, I want to see something exciting. When I vlog for my TikTok page, I'm doing stuff. I'm not going to show you, oh, my get ready with me. And, you know, most of those are thirst traps anyway.
Going to bed, waking up.
Exactly. Like, you know, so there's an audience for everything. But when it comes to like TV and film, for example, there has to be a clear example as to who you are marketing this to. Who do you want to watch this?
Yeah.
You know, like if you're making a sci-fi,
audience?
Who's this audience for? You know, and are you going to try to make it a subgenre so you get two different types of audience members, like what they did with Everything Everywhere All at Once? That was a sci-fi film, but they merged so much different genres into it. That's why people got it, but also were blown away by it. Because if you're an average sci-fi fan, you're like, oh, I'm used to this. But because they had so many different subgenres in it, that's why I think it worked.
It worked because so many different people could connect to different parts of it.
Exactly.
So, like, let's say now when like you said, you guys were more so on the story and they were more so on who's listening. Now, in hindsight, who do you feel like had the better position on that opinion?
I think both did because I understand both sides. Yeah. You've got a show to make, to market it to a certain audience, and you know your audience. And because the documentary covered the history of fashion when it comes from Windrush to, you know, high fashion as well, where we had people like Bianca Saunders, who's, you know, dressed Usher at the Met Gala last year. And then we had right down to Cortez and Fully Paid, which are streetwear fashion. That's all black culture. We're streetwear, we're high fashion, we are bright colors, we are traditional wear. That's all what black culture is. And like you said about the difference of black culture, we're showing our culture within the high fashion and the streetwear, because streetwear is black culture. So do you get what I'm saying? So I think we, all the notes that were applied just made it great. And so I think that's why we're all happy with it and proud to share it and put our names on it and talk about it.
Absolutely. And I feel like, to be fair, like I said, like, because I'm not necessarily into, like, kind of fashion like that. I know my co-host Mo is, but, like, even for me, I was just kind of... I always find it, like I said, like, sometimes I just go back and watch, like, videos or, like, see pictures of, like, historical times and what they were wearing and how that was considered, like, you know, the thing, like, different... I always feel like I said, there is some, obviously expression comes in many forms. There's like how you speak, how you look, all these kind of things, but I feel like also how you dress is, like, I would say the biggest one, because it's, you're not speaking to anyone, you're just showing that this is how you are. Like, for example, the Romans, they would have the purple toga, and the reason why I was always fascinated, I was kind of like, okay, why is it this color, why did they choose that color? But the reason why they chose that color was because it was very hard to get that dye. They had to, like, get a specific kind of seashell and then, which was expensive, roast it for, like, however long. And and then it was like, okay, cool, this shows, like, wealth, this shows this, this shows that.
Exactly.
So I was kind of always, like, I didn't know a lot of stuff that was being shown. And then I was like, okay, cool. This is, I guess, our own culture, our own history. And I kind of had no idea, like about it. Like, especially obviously, I think you might know his name, but the guy that's, like, I think, very colorful, has like a lot of tie dye.
Oh, I think Samson Saboye.
Yeah, that's what you're talking about. So, yeah. Like, him. I think he was a very fascinating character. How did you guys get him, though?
I think he knows Marley, who was the series producer. I think, yeah, she knows him, but he's well known in the fashion industry.
Yeah.
And he had a great exhibition on called Missing Thread.
Yeah.
And it was all about Black British designers, and it just highlighted everything. Yeah. So, like even guys
like him, and like the I think to the untrained eye you just see different colours in tie dye, but the way he was explaining it and what the colours meant and what it represented and what it was to wear it, I was like, oh wow, this is deeper than it looks. And I feel like I think that was the beautiful part of this this kind of documentary, finding out these kind of different stories and these kind of different people that you know, necessarily you wouldn't come across.
Yeah.
I mean, especially with the poor marketing from
please don't throw any
shade.
But I mean, it's what's the marketing budget, you know? Yeah. We did have a great launch event, which was the week of the release of the documentary. That was really cool. There was a lot of celebrities there, you know, out to come and support the documentary and promote it and stuff like that. But I mean, that's the industry, you know. Yeah. They don't put a lot of money into marketing British shows, and it's annoying. You know, but I don't know why, but
why do you feel like that is? I feel like maybe you do know why. You're just trying to be PC.
No, I don't know why. I feel like it's budget. I feel like it's budget costs. Yeah. I feel like people, they can save money on just hiring a social media manager.
And
they're like, job done. But it's like, that doesn't work.
Because a social media manager will do pretty much just promote on social media, no?
Yeah, I mean, they do curate strategies for content as well. But again, that's still only to like a niche audience, you know what I'm saying? Like, so it needs like adverts on, you know, on the network television, and that's the way to do it, really. So they just don't do it beyond GARMS, but you know, this is just in general for like loads of shows. For like mostly, there's so many shows that have, especially Black British ones, which have come out and I didn't know about them. Or I've seen people talk about it online and I'm like, oh, I need to watch this. And then I've told other people and they're like, what? I don't know this. Like, know this, and that's why you see people always saying, oh, we need more stuff than hood stuff. But then there's loads of non-hood stuff that's come out, but nobody knows because there's no promotion. You know, the only time you see promotion of shows these days and films is like for big Hollywood studios like Netflix and Amazon Prime, and that's if they have a British show. And that's when you're seeing the bus ads and the tube ads. And I just wish that, you know, money could go into it, you know, because the number one marketing tool is, to me, print media. It will always be. I don't think it will ever go away because we have to leave our house, right? We have to go to the shop to buy food. You have to go to work. We're going to meet family, going to go meet your friends. Like, if you're out and about in the world, you're going to see stuff. You're going to see it and be like, oh, what's that? Let me make a note of that. Let me, you know, that's promotion, you know. Word of mouth is good, but I think within the industry right now, as it's been struggling, word of mouth isn't enough because you can, yes, word of mouth could lead to like a sleeper hit, you know, like what I mean by sleeper hit is like it starts off very modest, the viewing numbers, and then it will just grow and grow. Has happened so many times. That's what happens with so many streaming shows. Like people just, oh, have you heard this show?
And then it pops.
But then you're not hearing that for our shows.
That's wild.
But did I lie?
No, you didn't. That's why you stopped me. To kind of also add on to that, and I also add on to the show that you kind of produced, I feel like fashion was a good one to kind of discuss more about our culture. What do you say would be like another avenue to kind of also press into?
I think it would be good to look at the beauty industry. I feel like the beauty industry in this country is huge, and there's a lot of influence from that, from Black culture as well, sport, a lot more, because they do a lot of stuff on footballers, but there's so many other sporting pioneers that I feel like need to be highlighted. And
I think one thing as well that I would add to the to the beauty one that you made, that was it was a good point. I think there was a it's called Hue, the I think that's the product name.
H-U-E. H-U-E.
Yeah. And I remembered, like, when it was picking up, it was the a lady on Twitter. She's called Vote for Honey.
Okay.
And she was basically talking about how I think she's in that form, like, that world. And she was like, that there's a lot of, like, Black pigmentation around the eyes, around the skin, and all these kind of things, and then and how to kind of help with that, and small steps, and and then that blew up, and then, because I mean, by when I blew up, I mean it came onto my timeline. And I don't really look at that usual stuff.
So see, that is viral.
That's viral, you know, and it had like thousands of thousands of like retweets. The demand was actually so massive to the point that I was like, wait, was this not discussed before? Did people not do this before and stuff like that? So I feel like, that would be a very...
And I'm also looking into, like, well, other ideas. But these ideas, what I'm doing, I'm developing. So nobody should still try to steal my ideas. so I've already got it on lock. But also, like, unsolved murders as well. Like, of Black people who've gone missing. So there's so many of those type of things what need to be highlighted and what can be done after doing something like GARM. So that's what I'm working on.
Absolutely. So, like, for example, let's say now, let's say unsolved murders, for example. How would you go from that seed to, like, the final thing before it gets greenlit? It would be you just doing so much research beforehand.
That's what I'm doing right now.
Loads of research.
So much research, getting contributors potentially who would be a part of it. So really building the story as to what's the story you're going to tell, you know, looking at the, what's the meat of it, you know, especially for something like unsolved murders, why are people going to be interested? You need to find the hook as into why is this unsolved? Some of the cases I've been looking into of have been, I'm not going to say names because I don't want anyone to know my idea, but looking into, like, missing Black kids to this day who've been missing for like over 30 years, and looking at the environment at the time and the culture. You know, a lot of the time we can refer to the Stephen Lawrence murder and how the police were incompetent in that. And so looking into what was going on, where was there racism at play as to why this wasn't properly investigated, or what other leads are there? Could it be a serial killer? Could it be tied to other serial killers who have been about, but they might not have been able to connect it to this murder because there's not enough evidence? Because some of the cases I've looked at, they've not found a body. You know, they've just been missing all this time and the families have just had to
firm it.
Just get on with their lives.
They just have to move on.
Well, you're still fighting for it, but, you know, there's only so much you can do. So it's kind of curating that. And you've got to look at, how you're going to keep people interested and build a story out of that. And that's what's great about documentaries, because there's so much you can build from hardcore evidence and factual stuff you can look at. It's different from writing a script, because... writing a script is just your imagination and your ideas, but again, you're telling a story. So again, what's going to pull people in, and why would a network want to invest in it, you know?
But then when you're like writing a script, you're just thinking most of the time, is this what the, would this get picked up? Would this get picked up? Would this get picked up?
I don't think you should think like that. I don't think you think to write, will this get picked up? I think me saying, you know, think about your audience, because eventually that's going to be the selling point of the show, but still just write freely and write how you want to write, you know, but just make sure that it's curated properly.
You can have them in mind as well.
You can have it in
like
mind.
The main thing.
But don't have it as like the main thing, because don't limit yourself, because if you limit yourself, then we're going to get the same thing. And if you limit yourself, you might not get where you want to get in your career anyway. So
that's true. Wow, you know what, I think, honestly, because when I was watching that mm-hmm. that show, I kind of wanted to speak to someone about it, and mm-hmm. and I had you.
Well,
obviously,
I'm happy.
Uh-huh. Which was, it's been an absolute privilege to mm-hmm. to kind of have you on, and to also speak about the show. But not only that, mm-hmm. kind of, I think what is very something that we want to do more so mm-hmm. on this podcast now, because mm-hmm. I think before we would just mainly as well talk with guests and speak about what they do and all that kind of stuff,
right.
But also
mm-hmm.
we kind of want our audience to take things away from mm-hmm. our episodes,
right? Okay.
And having you tell us pretty much the how the inside works mm-hmm. and the scoops and stuff like mm-hmm. that, as well as the gripes, I think is very valuable information for all of us. But to round it up on Black British culture, mm-hmm. are Somalis black?
Yes.
Well, that was a quick answer.
I mean, I've seen the debates, but I mean, you guys are black, like, please.
Yeah.
I mean
just it's been like, I was born into these debates happening. Mm-hmm. Came into school yeah. straight away. It was like, well, you guys aren't really.
I mean, so black. What are you then? Arab?
Yeah,
like, I don't.
We're.
No,
not.
You're black. Okay, you're black. Okay.
That's you know, I mean, I thought maybe for some reason I was expecting a political answer.
Oh, no.
I know what's.
Listen, if you've got black ancestry, you've got yeah. black parents, black grandparents, black great grandparents, yeah. you're black.
Damn right. And yeah. what a way to end it. Thank you very much for coming
Thanks
on.
Thanks for having me again.
And thank you guys for listening. Please make sure to like, subscribe, share, all that kind of amazing stuff. And make sure to check out Kashif. I'll put all of his stuff down below. Amazing producer, researcher, writer. He's just everything, you know what I mean? And also, he does give very good points and topics as well in that industry on his TikToks and on his Instagram as well. And I think you also have a podcast.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, which you don't promote as much, I think.
No, but no. I'm getting to
but
it.
But he has a podcast as well, mm-hmm. which you guys should definitely check out. And hope you guys take something away from this, and we will see you guys in the next one.
Keep moving, keep growing, keep learning. See you at work.